In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, and welcome to Really. That's still what it is, right? Really, with Tom and Dave.
Hell yes.
Nothing's
really with
changed.
The cool punctuation at the end that
yes.
we're still figuring out. But I think you've got a theory behind.
Well, it's the transition from curiosity to shock to acceptance. That's what it symbolizes to me.
See?
Because I believe that's what everyone goes through. Those are the three stages of UFO acceptance.
That's what I'm going through.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I'm at this point. I think I'm in shock.
I think you're at the cusp of shock and acceptance.
Yes. I think that's fair to say.
Acquiescence might be the term.
Yeah, some form of acceptance. You're the lubricant, Dave, that's helping me get through this this incredible transition, this metamorphosis that I'm undergoing.
And not a minute too soon, because I have a feeling we're at the start of a really truly weird year.
Yeah, we're gonna have a weird one.
I think so. Does it start
with our matching sweaters?
I think so. We don't normally coordinate.
I think this is a sign of something fucked up going on.
Our periods are probably seeking up as well.
Right. Well, they've been coordinated for a while now, but now we've gone on to beige sweaters.
I thought this
was going to make a statement, but now I feel a little common.
today we're branching out a little this week on the show into our sort of we could call it a sister phenomena.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah.
I'll let you explain.
Well, we're bridging into, it's a good day for it too, because the weather here in Studio City is extraordinarily bleak and London-like and rescue choppers are going overhead and pulling people out of the LA River a few blocks away. The streets are flooding. There's chaos. It's a kind of a typical LA weather response to any form of weather, which is high drama.
Yeah,
big headlines and
I think the
some mudslides. You know,
the hysterical storm watch coverage from all the networks seems for at least this time to be not hysterical in keeping with the situation.
There's some validity to the concern because it has been I think Topanga Canyon got about 11 inches of rain in like a few hours, which feels tropical. That feels like monsoon levels, and no houses are very sure of themselves on those hillsides. So there are probably some very anxious folks, and we hope everyone's house is safe and is enduring the rain as best they can. For my part, I've been inside, and I was thinking all day, like, this is a good day for a paranormal type interview. I have been kind of leaning in on the paranormal. I don't know where quite you sit in the realm of the paranormal.
Well, you have more experience with that than I have had brushes with it. but you've had fairly extreme brushes with it.
Yeah, and we have brought on an expert to speak with us today. Let me give you a little information about Mr. Aaron Sagers. Aaron is a TV host, producer, journalist, and author who can currently be seen as host of the hit show 28 Days Haunted, Netflix's first paranormal investigative series, as well as the long-running Paranormal Caught on Camera on Travel Channel Max Discovery Plus, which I think was just given a seventh season, so that's incredibly cool. He also hosts the paranormal pop culture podcast and YouTube show Talking Strange with the Den of Geek Network. Aaron Sagers previously executive produced and starred in Paranormal Paparazzi on Travel based on his paranormal pop culture website, hosted the two-hour special Paranormal Lockdown, Evidence Revealed, appeared on Portals to Hell, The Shocking Truth, Paranormal Challenge, and was a host and producer for Sci-Fi. He's the author of the Paranormal Pop Culture Collection, contributing author to Doctor Who Psychology and Joker Psychology, and contributing author to Academic References Guides, ABC Clio, and H.W. Wilson. He's presented alongside astronauts and astrophysicists for National Geographic and is a former journalism professor at New York University. When he's not traveling the globe, exploring spooky locales and appearing at Comic-Cons, he splits his time between New York City and his native Orlando and is known for his tiki concoctions, which with Chrissy's bar behind you, Dave, that we can talk about that. And he named his dog Indiana. So let's welcome Aaron to Really, and we're really grateful for him to be here. How's it going, Aaron?
Hi. Hey guys, thanks so much for having me here. What a lovely intro. Just such nice accolades that you listed there. I mean, I couldn't have said it better if I had written that myself.
Well, you've been busy. You've been busy acquiring them, and
you deserve your flowers, sir.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous. I mean, I'm just jealous of all your jobs in general. I mean, this isn't getting into the investigating the Knights Templar and ice caves and investigating Dracula. And so, how did this all happen? Did you just one day you're like, I'm going to do all sorts of cool shit around the world? I mean, did you sort of stumble into this? Were you driven by a kind of paranormal experience in your youth? Tell us your origin story.
Well, I think it's sort of the first part of it is I am a nerd. I mean, these days I say spooky nerd, but I'm a nerd and I grew up a nerd. And I think it's like you guys, and I think probably like a lot of your guests, that, you know, that fascination kind of sets in pretty early. Now, paranormal aside, like I was, you know, reading fantasy and horror and science fiction and, you know, watching all the movies, picking up comic books. I see multiple action figures and graphic novels in your background there, Tom. So I was just like, I loved all of this stuff. So whereas some people were taking those career paths, very responsible career paths of like, I'm going to go to school and become an accountant or an attorney or whatever. For me, I was like, well, I didn't travel much as a kid because I'm youngest of five kids and we didn't have a lot of money. So instead, I'm going to just be entirely irresponsible. I will go to college, but instead, I'm going to just keep being a nerd. And somehow that ended up becoming part of a job. So that alone was part of it. And I just wanted to explore and soak up as much as I could. But eventually I was like, well, okay, I love writing and journalism was always something I was into, as well as all the nerdy stuff. And so I started working in newspapers and magazines and whatnot. And that long fascination I had with weird stuff ended up becoming part of a job when I saw this becoming a genre on TV. And I was like, well, you know, let's peel back the layers a little bit and tell some of the stories and get to the folklore and get to the kind of as a journalist, I was always good about researching and interviewing. So it was like, let's kind of focus on that and add more depth to it. But and then I guess the spooky part of it, as far as when I first got into it, I grew up in the 80s, which was a great time of, you know, I could watch reruns of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. There would be Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack that came along. And then I was just both gripped and a little bit terrified by these commercials for the Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown books that were like in a deep, almost Rod Serling-esque intonation. A man is about to board a plane in Chicago when he's gripped by this undeniable
commercials. You're right. Yeah, those are fucking great. Right.
He leaves the plane, and 2 hours later, it goes down in flames. How do you explain this? You know, those kind of things just like burn themselves in my brain. So, you know, it was almost just like by stories that really hooked me reading all this stuff and just, you know, kind of soaking it all up as my early kind of, you know, nugget to this.
So I noticed that like you're kind of a paranormal journalist, not exactly a paranormal investigator. I don't know if that's a distinction without a difference to you or if that is something that is true or accurate. I mean, how would you kind of define it?
Yeah, I mean, I have done plenty of the investigation type of thing, and I get invited to lots of cool locations to explore, not just like spooky stuff, but, you know, night watches, sky watches, and other, you know, Bigfoot hunts, things like that. But the journalist part, I think, first off, I kind of say that because I spent way too much money in both undergrad and grad school. And I'm like, well, I have to put that to use somehow, just to make the folks proud. But it's also, it's the research component and the interview component. So, I mean, something I say to people is, to a degree, I don't try to convince people to believe or not believe in things. I'm fascinated by the stories. I'm fascinated by the folklore and the fact that these things are kind of told and repeated across cultures that never had a connection to one another, never had any interactions, and they're telling similar stories. That fascinates me. So that's the kind of the research and interviewing component to it. So if you look at why we're telling these stories, why they matter, to a degree, the belief part is sort of the next thing. You don't necessarily have to get there to still appreciate the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I've always felt like, yeah, just the fact that hauntings and ghosts and, you know, apparitions have been a part of every culture throughout recorded history, it seems. And certainly a part of all the art. And, you know, they said there's like how many ghosts in Shakespeare, that it just sort of seems like for something to be that prevalent in human culture, if there's probably something solid behind it all, you know, or you know, wouldn't persist so long.
Yeah. And how sort of the perception of things like ghosts, when you talk about Shakespeare, the way ghosts were portrayed for the early part of what I call paranormal pop culture is that they were more solid shapes. You would go to Wandlebury Castle in England and you would see ghostly armies doing battle with one another, or in Hamlet, Shakespeare's daddy shows up in sort of very solid form and armor and whatnot. He's not this ethereal thing. That kind of comes in a little bit later within the fiction component of it. But yeah, I mean, even though maybe things evolve a little bit, we are telling these stories and they stick with us even in this era of incredible technology and medical advancements and all of that. But in a way, we also are kind of, the Victorians really kind of set the path of where we still are. I mean, when you watch a lot of the ghosty shows that I've been on, other shows and whatnot, as much as you want to bust out a gadget that's a blinky, blinky, lighty, lighty, flashy, flashy, beepy, beepy thing, it's still like, okay, we're just trying to put a spin on an old Victorian seance.
Yeah, that's the huge spiritualist movement of the Victorian era, with, you know, that obviously that Arthur Conan Doyle was such a big part of, both as someone investigating it, and I guess and then someone who became disenchanted with it as well.
Well, he was like one of my favorite characters, and he and Harry Houdini's like frenemy kind of relationship, I love. And you know, as I mentioned before the show began, I'm based in Brooklyn, so I'm just a stone's throw away from Houdini's grave in the Machpelah Cemetery in Queens. And this testament to this guy that was, even Houdini wanted to believe, you know, sort of like the X-Files, it's, you know, he wanted to believe. And then he was also snookered by fraudsters and fake mediums and whatnot, which then kind of set him on this path to debunking all of this stuff. And then his friendship with Conan Doyle kind of came to loggerheads because of that.
Mm-hmm.
The irony of Conan Doyle is, because I have a book called The Arcanum, which was Houdini and Conan Doyle and doing their sort of X-Files thing, because they were the original, like, sort of Mulder and Scully in a way, you know, and
with even more sexual tension.
With, oh, yeah. Yeah, with, yeah. And you really wanted to see those two get together, mm-hmm. Conan Doyle and Houdini. But yeah, the irony that this is the guy who created the most skeptical, logical character in history. And it was a marvel and probably a consequence of his loss of his son, you know, like he had just death in his family and real sorrow. So I think that probably pushed some of his skepticism aside. But yeah, that falling out between those two is one of the coolest, most interesting kind of spiritualist events, I guess, ever. Was Houdini kind of like, yeah, man, I'm not feeling it. And Conan Doyle's wife was doing the automatic writing for him and trying to convince his mother had come through, right, and didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would go on vacations with one another. Like that was in Atlantic City. Conan Doyle and his wife were visiting, and then Houdini. So previously, Houdini had visited Arthur Conan Doyle, and this is the funny thing is Arthur Conan Doyle. I think we technically should be saying just Doyle is his last name, but I just have to say Conan Doyle.
Of course,
it's like a hyphenate in a way.
Anything with Conan in the title,
right? How can you not? But so Houdini had previously visited the Conan Doyle family in England, and now they came out to AC, and then Houdini visited them, and that's when that sort of supposed seance took place. I mean, you know, because of the book. But I love that these guys. The kind of the best part for me is that Arthur had kind of the last word, right? Because Houdini dies, and Houdini's widow Bess is like, well, I still believe that they had a fondness for one another, even though there was this tension, this kind of war of the words in newspapers and whatnot. But I still believe that she had a fondness for him. And Conan Doyle comes out and says, he has like throws this bit of shade. He's like, well, actually, Houdini showed me a spirit photo that he said he thought was real, but I thought it was kind of crap. And then he was like, he said these other things. And then he ultimately said, I think Houdini himself had these psychic powers that were so strong that during these debunking sessions with mediums, that he was like blocking the power of these other mediums during these seances, which is kind of like just this beautiful like button in this frenemy situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
After the dude is dead.
I know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I guess Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, he was leaving open the opportunity for Houdini to come back and refute him, I guess. Though.
Right. Yeah. And one of those Halloween seances. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because I know like seances are one of those things that I kind of thought to myself, I was convinced they were all, you know, that it was all bullshit and it was all charlatans and that. And then I read my friend Leslie Kane's book about surviving death, and she's a pretty smart, rational, not foolhardy person. And she's got me kind of convinced that, oh, there are seances that are real and that there are real phenomena that occur and that ectoplasm is a real thing. Like all these things that I was, again, it's the same thing we talk about with the whole UFO issue, where every time I think there's something I can safely go, oh, I don't need to take that seriously. I don't need to consider that. Then someone comes along and convinces me that I do have to give it serious consideration. Did you have any kind of a, like, did you have a belief in like hauntings or persistence after death before you started working in this field, or was it just curiosity?
Yeah. So weird stuff did happen in my childhood home. And some of it is stuff that 40 years later, I'm still kind of unpacking. And it's things that amongst my family, as I mentioned, the youngest of five kids. So everybody kind of processed it in different ways. So I'm actually putting on the journalist hat right now as an adult, trying to get to the root of some of the weird stuff that happened in my family that we just didn't talk about. So I think maybe unconsciously that had to have influenced I went to Catholic school, and I recall this moment where weird stuff was taking place, and I went to the library and I go have a conversation with the lovely librarian, Mrs. Pomeroy. I'm in second grade, grade two, and all of probably like 6 years old or whatever, maybe seven. And I ask her about a book on witchcraft, and Mrs. Pomeroy, lovely librarian that she was, is like, well, here's, you know, the Sabrina and the Teenage Witch or the Littlest Witch, and you know, and I'm like, no, the real shit.
Medieval sacrificial shit.
Yeah. I don't know if like 6-7-year-old Aaron was like expecting her to pull back this false wall, this bookshelf or bookcase, and then there would be like the Necronomicon behind there, or what, the leather bound, like, oh well, since you asked. Instead, it led to a interesting phone call home, I think, about little innocent Aaron asking about grimoires. But and then so there was that. I think that unconsciously influenced me, and I remained interested in it. But there was sort of this nexus point when I was working for, I forget which newspaper it was. I was working for a Chicago Tribune owned newspaper at one point in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I went to Eastern State Penitentiary, and it's a pretty well-known, supposedly haunted location, but also incredible history, and had a weird experience there that kind of, even though I was already fascinated by it, even though I already thought that there was stuff out there, this kind of launched me into the mode of like, I want to pursue this more seriously, and
what happened there, Aaron?
So have either of you been there?
I'm a Philly guy, so I know of it. And also I am a devout watcher of the original Ghost Hunters for many years.
Okay.
People in the dark bumping into things. And so I've seen that location, but I'm very curious about what your experience there was.
Well, and Dave, if you're not familiar with it, it was designed to look like a medieval castle, even though it was built in the late 1800s, but it was designed to look foreboding, the place that you did not want to go to. And it was created with grand, lofty ideals of penitence and repentance, hence the name penitentiary. And instead, of course, what happens is punishment, overcrowding, torture, lots of death. So when I was there, I wasn't really pursuing the paranormal as such. I was there as a reporter, but I'm walking down these very cavernous cell blocks, and out of the corner of my eye, I see what appears to be a form in about 10 feet away from me in the depths of this cell. There's a barrier about hip height, I guess, waist height, so you can't enter the cell, but I see this form, this shadowy form, what we call referred to as a shadow figure, and pacing back and forth. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. That's strange. And I'm kind of trying to deduce what's going on. Like, okay, trick of light. Is it that? Is it that? What's going on here? Can't quite explain it. So then I do this thing that I think a lot of people have experienced when they're kind of pursuing this. It's like, all right, I'm going to talk to myself. I'm just talking to myself. It's nothing's going to happen. I'm like, all right, poke my head. I'm like, if something's there, come closer. Pacing back and forth, stops, rushes me.
Oh.
Field of vision, entirely filled blackness.
Really?
I leap back, let out a few choice expletives, and I take a beat, and then I look, and again, this thing is now in the back of the cell again, pacing back and forth. So some time passes, and again, I'm trying to puzzle this out. I'm trying to figure out what this is.
How much time is passing through it, like, in terms of you're just being able to just watch this thing?
It was probably like a matter of like seconds. I don't know. Time, you know, just dilutes, right? It's hard to keep track of everything. And that's something we hear from experiencers, you know, from across the scale, hauntings to abductions and whatnot. But this thing seems to be back in the back of that cell and is pacing back and forth. So I don't say anything. And then some time passes and someone else comes along in this area that I did not tell this story to. And they look back there and they're like, looks like something's moving back there, like pacing back and forth. So like, that was an interesting confirmation. Well, it was maybe not confirmation, interesting corroboration. And then, so I had been there since many, many times, either filming, doing events, various things. And people don't know that exact cell that I had this experience, but I've conducted these little experiments where I will have people walk down a cell block, tell me how they feel, stop, take your time, don't rush. But if you get uncomfortable, stop, turn around, tell me where you feel the vibes, you know? And it seems like people always kind of hit this same kind of area and always get a little creeped out and have to turn around and come back. Now, I'm also a pretty analytical person. So, you know, maybe there's something about liminal spaces. Maybe there's something explainable taking place there. But I've done this many times. I can't quite puzzle it out as to what was happening. And it was a significant experience. And Brooklyn is saying hello to you outside in the form of...
Sorry, a rescue chopper may come over my house any second now and pull me out of the flood. That's wild.
But even with that, I mean, I think my approach to this stuff across the board as far as phenomena is, I think I'm willing to go into the deep end of the pool and say there's a lot of weird stuff out there, and I'm willing to, you know, embrace people's stories and explore it. And I'm fascinated by this, but I also believe there's a lot of leaky plumbing and bad wiring in the world. There's a lot of air shows and night skydivers. There's a lot of animals moving around the woods. There's a lot of things that we can explain. So, but I think if you, and this is like, I think sort of from the journalistic perspective, something that was drilled into me from a young age as a professional, is that as a journalist, if you're interviewing someone, you can't be cynical, or you should not be cynical. So totally disbelief, closed-mindedness is not, you're not doing your job as a journalist if that's the way you approach something. But if you automatically, without hesitation, believe everything to the point of being dogma, that's not healthy either. But if you maintain sort of this middle spot of a sliding scale of skepticism, open-minded, but trying to explain what you can, then I think that's where we get to the cool parts. That's where I think we push things forward a little bit more. Because you might be like, well, I personally have never seen a bipedal hominid moving around the Pacific Northwest, but enough people and enough indigenous people have reported this thing for, you know, generations upon generations. Maybe there's something to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting aspects to all of the conversations we've been having is, and I even think George Knapp was talking about it with us, was that places like Skinwalker Ranch, you know, they're places that tend to kind of marry all of these phenomena together. And yeah, it became, you know, like, well, I kind of don't believe in Bigfoot. I'm open to UAP. I think I've had paranormal experiences, but I'm not sure about psychic. Like we have all these sort of, right, like these silos of things that, you know, and I know Dave and I have discussed this where you, and then you start to go like, well, like, wait a minute. Okay. If I'm accepting that there's a possibility of dimensional entities, you know, entering somehow our atmosphere, interacting with us, what the fuck am I to say about a ghost or a fucking psychic? Like It's really hard. It is. And it's kind of like, yeah, the boat gets leaky and then suddenly you're, and it is, you have to remain kind of skeptical. So many of these events are personal experiences. So it's hard to know. And that's why, like, I don't know, I guess my, one of my questions is what, you know, it feels like the paranormal is still sort of where UFOs were maybe 10 years ago, right? We're still kind of, people are like, well, you know, I don't know. And as entertainment, okay, but I'm not sure if I'm willing to accept this as a science and this, that, whereas sort of UFOs, thanks to Leslie Keene and people, you know, in like 2017, and I guess it's kind of undergone this sort of reputation facelift, right? Like it's now sort of, we're going to focus on aviation safety and these sort of real things and the military, you know, footage and pilot testimony. So I guess what would it take for the paranormal to sort of get out of that space, because they both exist in this cultural, on this cultural fence, right? It's entertainment. It's like anybody can sort of, you know, I'm this one's an expert. That's like, what is it? And yet, I don't know. I think there's validity to it. Obviously, not all of it is real or sincere. I'm just not sure. You know, do you have a feel like what will it take for the paranormal to kind of get, you know, kind of break through in that way?
I still view ufology under the, I think that still fits within the paranormal realm. I mean, I still think there's plenty of people that think this is a wackadoo topic because, you know, you look at local news broadcasts and the thing that even before I did this as a job, continuing to now, like you get, interviewed by a local news channel or whatever, and they're going to automatically play the Exorcist theme song or the X-Files theme song. It's a so in a and like a, you know, we're interested, but also, well, all right, Sharon, thanks for passing along that colorful story. You know, so I still think UFOs kind of fit within that, even though, even with the New York Times shedding, you know, talking about it.
No,
I think definitely the X-Files theme shows up, I think, at least 80% less often than it used to.
Yeah,
just a few years ago, but still does definitely show up.
And I think, like, you know, as far as what the what would be sort of the disclosure moment of ghosts or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of suspect that I don't know if there really is that moment, because even with the idea of ghosts, I don't really know what I believe, and I'm willing to embrace the fact that I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what I believe. I'm just curious. You know, when we define ghost, it kind of tells me more about you, Dave, you, Tom, than it says about what a ghost is, because I'm learning about your perhaps religious upbringing, perhaps your, you know, cultural background. You know, I look at it as like, is a ghost an echo, a footprint? Is it something that's active and intelligent? Is it some sort of time anomaly? Is it, are we the ghost to someone else and they're existing in their own timeline or other dimension? So, you know, I kind of like the crazy shit deep end of the pool questions, but I don't know if there's really a disclosure moment, but I can say anecdotally, most people out there, when you kind of allow them, create that zone for them to talk about it without being labeled crazy town banana pants, they tend to have some sort of version of a belief or notion. It's hang around in a bar long enough and someone's going to mention, you know, some sort of strange sighting in the sky and some sort of haunting story. It's, and it always kind of begins with this sort of preface, like almost a buffer, an adviso of like, well, you know, I don't believe in any of that crazy stuff, but there was this one time, you know, and then they give us a story and that's where the, so if we kind of let them say like, okay, well, and what they're doing is they're saying, hey, like, I take my kids to school and I pay my taxes and I, you know, I don't wear too many tinfoil hats, but, you know, but weird stuff. I did have weird stuff. But if we just kind of allow people to say like, okay, tell me your story. You don't have to give me the buffer part. Just launch into it.
Yeah.
That kind of sets the stage.
I know this sounds crazy thing. Yeah. Everyone does that. Yeah. I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, but, you know, as if to say, because I know it sounds crazy, then you can understand I'm not crazy. I'm, you know,
even though
everyone else
I'm not the
be.
Crazy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And, well, I was saying, we talked earlier about George and, you know, like as George said, like UFO people hate the Bigfoot people hate the ghost people. And, you know, and, but what they found at in OSAP and at Skinwalker and what George, James Lukatsky basically said was, you know, that after all of their studies, they came to the conclusion that it's that all of this stuff is probably part of one phenomena, that all of it's related, that the that ghosts, cryptids, UFOs, you know, psychic phenomena, that there's a that there is a through line through all of it, and that it all tends to show up in the same places and amongst the same people. So that there's, you know, it's like you said, you can't really look at the UFO subject without looking at the paranormal.
Yeah.
Because you can't separate them, honestly. You know, you might want to try to separate them to make yourself seem more rational and serious.
And but, the Pentagon was trying to separate the paranormal from whatever they perceived as what they wanted to study. And that's kind of sort of to this point, like it's you know, you have to accept all the weirdness. Like you can't start choosing favorites or picking like, okay, well that, you know, that makes more sense than this, when there was also, and Aaron, even to your point, like Skinwalker Ranch is defines a mysterious, you know, hairy monster that's running around out there. Whereas of course I grew up scared shitless of Bigfoot. I mean, in, you know, Pence, I was convinced Bigfoot was coming through my door anytime, in thanks to In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy,
yeah,
the famous Bigfoot episode. But yeah, I mean, I think that kind of incredibly, because that might've been one of the lines I would have drawn as an adult, where I can't say like, that they're, you know, that yes, it is, it has been culturally sort of imprinted in so many different, you know, groups and throughout history, at, like who's to say?
Well, and then when you, so this notion of like one big phenomena, I think maybe there's something to it, or there's just so many things at play that, you know, as humans, we like to assign order and rules to things and put it in a box. Again, like this notion of like, what is a ghost or what is a, you know, what is a UFO, UAP? Is it, you know, we still want to say, well, it's this or it's this. Well, maybe it's X, Y, Z. Maybe it's all of the above, you know? I love, and, you know, kind of mentioning folklore again, like I love when you look at stories of visitations, right? Throughout history, throughout, you know, legends and lore and whatnot. What sounds like a perhaps something that's of a vampiric visitation or attack to another culture could be demons, demonology, could be a UFO visitation or abduction, you know? It's typically when people are awakened in the middle of the night and they see a figure at their bed or something trying to get into their homes, or, you know, that sense of lost times, all these things, when you remove the labels, you start seeing a lot of patterns emerge. And that's, I think, quite interesting. I don't know what it means, but it's, you know, just I embrace all the weirdness to it.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, just like, you know, and you look at things like Skinwalker Ranch, yeah, or you look at other areas, there's multiple locations that are not even really getting a lot of attention where there are this kind of cross-section of hauntings, cross-section of supposed cryptid activity, and then UAP sightings, or getting into the territory of things like elementals and indigenous lore and whatnot.
Yeah. And it does seem like, I know certainly with the UFO subject, and everyone that goes deep into it eventually seems to drift over to issues like consciousness and trying to understand how consciousness is maybe a through line through all of these phenomena. And also the notion of what happens when we die. You know, is there a persistence? Is there something, and also psychic phenomena. Again, the notion that some part of us exists outside of our brains, outside of our skulls.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that maybe, that whatever that is the through line through all of these different strange incidents.
Well, you guys had Paul Hynek on your show, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had Paul, I've interviewed him for my The Talking Strange show, and it fascinating guy. I loved talking to him. And you talk about someone that, yeah, it is, he's looking at things through, you know, with use of hallucinogenics and whatnot, looking at things as part of a higher consciousness, but also I had a chat with him about sort of the spectral side of things, and he thinks at one point, I have to kind of revisit that interview, that he may have had like some sort of visitation from his father. So, you know, even that guy that is connected to, you know, one of the most famous UFO anomalous researchers of all time, his son is still kind of talking about that and pushing it forward in that way. Quote my buddy John Tenney, the stuff you think is weird is probably weirder than you think.
Yeah. Ralph Blumenthal's book about John Mack. I mean, that book ends with several of John Mack's friends telling tales of visitations of John coming back and stopping in and giving, you know, both. What was the one thing where he told somebody it's not what we thought, or we got
it's not what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and went to somebody else that he was working on a paper with, and gave explicit directions on where to find the research, you know?
Well, there's some of the recent paranormal, there's an interesting shift taking place with like a lot of paranormal investigators. And, you know, there's one gentleman by the name of Bill Chappell, who I've known for a long time, and he is a legitimate like engineer and scientist. And he was picking up strange voices, strange sounds from, equipment that he was building. He wasn't trying to build like a ghost hunting equipment. He was just picking up strange things. And it has been used on a lot of ghost hunting shows. Ghost Adventures has used a lot of his equipment. But when you really talk to Bill, he's like, I don't really know what this is, but I think it's us. He tends to think it's maybe some version of us or other consciousness. It's not just ghosts. I don't want to speak for Bill, but there's other investigations taking place where people may be setting out in a supposed haunted location, but they get deep into some sort of sensory deprivation experiment and start encountering, or they say they are encountering, beings, stuff, things out there that are not ghosts, but are out there as part of us. And when people ask questions like, well, what's going on? They're like, well, you're not ready yet. Or, you know, it's not what you think, or, you know, things along those lines,
which is very trippy. The DMT experience that everybody describes. Yeah.
Which is very like in line with the stuff that like, I think John Keel would have been like, you know, digging. Like I would love, I sadly never got to meet him, but man, like talk about a guy that I think would be having a field day right now.
Yeah. Well, like, well, Jacques Vallée's still kicking around. So he's,
well, right. Yeah.
And who someday I'll actually read Passport to Magonia instead of just sort of vaguely quoting it without really knowing what I'm talking about.
You know, I have to say, yeah, Paul Hynek and that conversation about DMT sent me on I don't think I have the emotional constitution to partake myself in one of his, you know, even though he was pretty willing to let everybody jump on into the trip with him and Dave, maybe someday I've tried twice
and it didn't work for me, failure
to launch. But I do find that an incredibly intriguing aspect to this whole subject, because it does feel like that is one of the ways to find a union between these various elements, because and a few of the books, you know, Alien Information Theory, some crazy books, you know, like about the DMT, and do make a really convincing case that something extraordinary is happening with that chemical, which is sort of ubiquitous, sort of in everything. It's in our brains. It releases at various times in our lives, certainly at death, at birth, you know, at different times during our development in the womb, supposedly. And yet I can't think of anything where different users are having conversations with the same types of entities. It just does not correlate to anything that, and I, as a youth, certainly had my fair share of hallucinogens and this and that and the other thing. And there's, yes, of course there's a commonality to some experiences, but this feels completely unique. I don't know. I feel like that is one area of exploration that might, I don't know, then the next 10 years might be a very interesting domain.
Yeah. What's this?
I think part of it is because of what we're also talking about, that only a couple of years ago would have been the stuff of ESP and touchy-feely psychic, crystals and whatnot. And I'm not dismissing that, but as both of you said, there tends to be like these camps, like, well, we're the serious ones because we're looking at the UAP situation, and you guys, the ghosty people, you're fucking weird, you know, or whatever else it is. And then like the Bigfoot people are a whole other brand of like a different school of, you know, but it's like, we're all weird, guys. Like, first off, let's just embrace that. Okay. Let's we're all the weird kids. Like, we're all the spooky nerds. It's cool. But also let's not, it doesn't mean you automatically have to believe every story that people tell you, but I think being open to the stories, listening to the stories that people are telling, is important, because what ends up happening is, because we are so desperate to be taken seriously. Well, we're not a crackpot. We're looking at this. We're really analyzing this. We're taking this, really approaching a serious perspective on this, you know, because we want to be, you know, we don't want to be dismissed as the stigmatized and ostracized as the crackpots, you know? Mm-hmm. So we kind of put on this overly serious veneer sometimes. And then we're like, well, but those are just the yokels over in the trailer park. That's all some, you know, swamp gas or whatever. So that kind of thing annoys me, because then we're missing out on stories that potentially have legitimate merit or at least cultural significance because it's being passed around in those locations. Like, we can't dismiss that stuff over there either. And, you know, the show I do, one of the shows I do is Paranormal Caught on Camera. And we get
congratulations on 7 seasons. Jesus, that's amazing.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I've been involved in a lot of projects, and I love the hell out of that show because in a way we get to travel the world more than any other show I've been on, more than any other show out there, because we're getting the clips submitted from all over the world, from all range of supposedly strange phenomena. And some of those clips, yeah, maybe it's a Chinese lantern, maybe it's like, you know, whatever. But you also get these clips where people are explaining their environment. They grew up in this space. They know that space very well. They know that airspace. They right. know where the airports are. They know, you know, where the military bases are. They know the natural phenomena or the ball lightning that may be seen in the area. And they're detailing what's taking place and then saying, and meanwhile, that's not it. That's not that thing that I'm used to having lived here for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And sometimes people are like, well, those guys are just trying to get rich, or they're just trying to get attention for themselves or whatever. I'm like, first off, sorry, reality TV doesn't make you rich. But secondly, like, you can't just dismiss everyone as trying to pull off some sort of con, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why I get frustrated when people kind of play the card of the local yokels, who is kind of like elitist anyhow, because you're saying, oh, because you live in a rural area, you must be an idiot or whatever. I hate that kind of thing, because I see it happen a lot within the high-minded folks that we a lot of times interact with, that they're like, we're the serious researchers, and dismiss those guys over there. Does that make sense? Like, that's kind of a tangent.
It's the commonality, again, when you listen to enough of these stories and enough of these, you know, experiences, it's finding the commonality that is where you'll start to yield like the real stuff. Like, you have to listen to people, and it's such a private event. Like, you have to trust people in order to find out anything about this thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Dave. And I was going to say, and these threads do run throughout recorded history. But I watched recently a short doc, like a 45-minute documentary that was put out. It's on YouTube by New York University Research Hospital on the subject of death. And it was very serious, very high-minded, very, you know, accredited, you know, medical researchers talking about death, and basically saying that the first near-death experiences were reported shortly after we discovered CPR, which was the first time in human history that somebody who was considered dead was then made alive again, you know, which was a, you know, so we had to change our definition of death, you know, because from cardiac arrest to, you know, then we went to brain death as the defining factor. And then a couple of generations, we believed, you can revive someone, but after 5 minutes, the brain is.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Irreparably destroyed. And now they're at a point where they think they've revived brains after hours of death. And And one of the things, you know, they've rebranded the experience. They no longer call it near death experience. They call it a recalled experience of death, because they're saying because it wasn't near death. The people that they're dealing with in their hospitals are people who fully were dead for hours and come back to life. And, you know, so the experiences and all coming back with conscious experiences of their own death, of the people fighting to keep them alive, and of things that happened to them once they were dead, and of their return to their bodies. And this is coming from NYU, you know, NYU Research Hospital. And I encourage everyone to try and find this documentary. It's just remarkable to think that one of the things our medical establishment is getting to the point where, you know, even a few years ago, near death experience was pretty much widely mocked and dismissed and explained as, oh, this is just the brain losing oxygen. And, you know, and it's a soothing illusion as the brain right. shuts down. But now they're saying, no, because this is all happening long after the brain has shut down.
Well, and then, so we've kind of got to the point, we're getting to the point where people that work, you know, commercial pilots, people that work in the military, they're encouraged to come forward with their stories of seeing anomalies in the sky, right? We're encouraging that. I still don't believe that stigma has been lifted, and I still don't think even professionally it's gone. But on paper, we're in theory encouraging people. But from the spooky side, the ghosty side of things, I can't tell you how many people I've interacted with, cops, doctors, a lot of nurses, paramedics. First off, I know a lot of people that are in those fields that do investigate this side of things. But even the ones that aren't necessarily in quote unquote investigating it, I can't tell you how many people I know in those fields that tell me stories of having these strange happenings, haunting happenings in their places of work. Even pretty much every military base has some sort of haunting activity, which is like, we just don't talk about it. Nurses, like there's typically always some sort of haunted room nurses that are around people in their final moments are consistently reporting these experiences of someone talking to a loved one and having a very there's a pattern, this loved one that's almost like ushering them through or whatever. I've even heard the flip side of that, of like sort of these darker visitors at the end of people's lives, which scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. But you know, so many of those tales are happening, cops going into crime scenes, encountering things. I personally, I will tell you this, I don't know if I've said this on an interview before, but when I was a young reporter, I was around a crime scene, and I was doing some recordings, not as a paranormal investigator, but as a reporter, a young reporter, and heard voices in the background that only later on, years later, did I come to think about it in terms of like, oh, that sound of like crying on that crime scene, there was no one that I know of that would have been making that noise on that scene. And instead it was like a weird thing picked up on my recorder. So these things tend to be happening all around. It's like, again, a bit of a stigma associated with it.
And yeah, talking about it. And you're right. Everybody has them when you get one layer through the conversation or one, you know, and someone, and I, to be honest, so just personal story that is only a few days old. So my mother passed away a couple of years ago and suddenly, it was terrible, and it has sort of not left me and been very, very intense. So, and it was my birthday a couple of days ago. Now I will sort of poetically go like, oh, message, or see a duck in the pool and say, oh, it's sent by, you know, like I'll do that. And I will sort of rationalize it to myself as my own kind of symbolic, you know, wanting connection and all that stuff. So But this one made me kind of, this one made me sit up literally because it was, so it was 6 a.m. on my birthday morning. And I received a text from my daughter who's away at school. Now, normally my mother, God bless her, would have been the first, like she would have been like first there, like early morning, like would have like sort of texted, would have texted me. And it was funny because my thought when I looked at the thing was like, oh, that's kind of, oh, isn't that sweet? Like now my daughter is texting me and like that would have been mom and whatever. And it's, I'm still sleeping. And I'm kind of like, that's very sweet. I'll get back to her, you know, when I get up kind of thing, put the phone down. And about 45 seconds later, wham, there was this where both Christina, my wife, and I, like we both like are bolt upright. What the fuck was that? Was it an earthquake? Because we had just had an earthquake the previous evening. I can tell you there was no earthquake at this time we checked. But what we turned around and we have a big kind of armoire dresser that contains a bunch of sweaters. And it's heavy and the doors are heavy and it is not a, it's not like we have a shelf in the kitchen that does kind of go like and close like sort of, this is not one of those, but something blew the doors open and dropped about half the sweaters on the floor. And we're both looking at that, like what is going on? Like dogs are across the house. And it was really just one of those, you know, like I had to tell her the story. Like, I think that was like a happy birthday. I don't know what happened. There's no animal in the house. There was no explanation for what blew open the doors loudly to like clanking this old style kind of key on the, not key, but sort of an old style latch lock. Anyway, I mean, it's just, I think these things happen to people constantly. And yes, we don't talk about them maybe enough or give them, you know, or yeah, we did, or we kind of dismiss them as like, some people can have them, some people can, or mine's real, but that person's isn't real, you know, their story or something like that. But it was a reminder because I've honestly been a little shut down to that, to the sort of idea of the messages like, oh, I'm just being romantic and everybody, you know, and it's, I don't know. It's everywhere.
I love that. I mean, I love it because for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, like I said, I do think there's, you know, a lot of bad wiring and leaky plumbing out in the world. I also think that there is chicanery. There's people that are trying to fake things or con other people, you know, and it comes down to, you know, the pursuit of some sort of profit typically. But there is also these weird moments and there's hilarious moments too. It doesn't always have to be this serious, like, experience. I think that there's just weird shit happening that's hilarious, that maybe it's someone demanding attention, you know, wanting to like, hey, stupid, happy birthday, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like I've had weird experience, like I'll go into some old hospital or asylum or whatever and I'm on the job and I'll have weird experiences and it's very cool and you have these moments where you're like, oh, okay, I actually did just see that thing, and then other people have just seen bizarro situations. Or then I'll come back to my old building in Brooklyn and then the funny stupid weird stuff happens, like I'm taking a shower and I hear something on the other side of the shower curtain and, you know, poke my head around and both knobs on my old style like basin are on full blast, which I know is not something that I would do ever. I would never go full blast on both. So I'm like, all right, look, I got to pay the bill here. So I need you to, whatever's going on, please don't waste water.
Yeah, stop using the fucking water, man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, what do you think of the hitchhiker effect? Do you think if you go to a place like Eastern Street Penitentiary or whatever, you know, whatever, not Eastern State. We talked a lot of, we've heard a lot about it. We've read a lot about it. I think there's something potentially to it. What do you have a thought on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think again, like I may be an expert in doing this and I would say an expert researcher, but as far as the actual phenomena, I don't have, you know, the handbook for the recently deceased, right? I don't have the rules here. I don't know what's going on. I just have theories based on a lot of things I've read, but, or ideas, maybe they're not even theories, But I do think, perhaps being the nerd that I am, having consumed so much Star Wars, maybe there's something to the idea of like this energy that envelops everything, you know? Maybe there is something to the fact that things can be flitting around and decide like, oh, that Tom seems pretty cool. I'll hang out with him for a minute. Or maybe this, item that has deep emotional connection to people, to someone, maybe there is something bound to it. I don't know, but I don't tend to go in the direction of, I think there's scary stuff out there. I think there's maybe some overwhelming kinds of things out there, but I don't kind of go into this bleakness, I guess. Like, I don't think that it's heaven, hell kind of situation. I think that maybe there's just weird energies moving around. And I also don't think that whatever we call a ghost, whatever it is, I don't think it's necessarily locked into one place. Mm-hmm. Maybe for some reason, maybe some might be sticking around a spot, or maybe it is an imprint for some of them, or maybe there's some of them that's like, hell, like, I never went to Fiji. I'm going to Fiji now. Boom. Like, now I'm over there, or I'm going to hang out with this family for a while because they seem pretty cool, or, you know, whatever. But yeah, I do think it's kind of connected to weird energies sort of being surrounding everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I guess is that, we don't know what consciousness is. We certainly don't know how we're only just starting to, as I said, now when you have, a fairly dry NYU documentary talking about consciousness existing outside of the body as a separate entity. We're crossing into a more interesting plane of discussion.
Well, and Dave, you mentioned spiritualism, which is, yeah, it's a topic that I really love. I love researching. I love reading about all these amazing
And it was
characters.
Taken quite seriously at the time.
Yeah. Well, Dan Aykroyd's family, big into spiritualism, was like a notable family, which then, handful of years later or 100 years later, we end up getting to something like Ghostbusters, dotted line connection. Mm-hmm. But, what tends to happen is spiritualism, it has its moment after great moments of trauma, great cultural trauma, so mm-hmm. American Civil War, World War One. I think that this new version of post 9/11 in America, right after that, we started seeing this emergence of the paranormal investigative show, the reality TV show. I think in a way that was kind of us processing loss through entertainment, through pop culture. And even original spiritualism had a big entertainment pop culture component to it. They were the reality TV stars of their time, the Fox sisters filling auditoriums and whatnot. So I think post COVID, if we are post COVID, whatever, however we're referring to this time, we're entering into this next wave, this kind of postmodern spiritualism. And I think it's fascinating because it's getting weirder in a good way. Mm-hmm. It's not just about life and death. It is about consciousness and existence. I see it through younger influencers on TikTok. I see it by people talking, bringing back these old stories of, fairies, elementals, cryptids, lore, legends, all of that good stuff. It's almost like we're just, the paradigm is shifting and the horizons are expanding as far as how people are expressing what stuff we're made of and what's out there.
Yeah, well, I definitely, for me, that's definitely, I guess, the journey I'm on, because as a lifelong atheist and, a materialist reductionist, a believer in the scientific method, and that everything comes down to matter, and everything that is not understood can be understood. And now, and my entry point is through, is largely through the UFO story. But I'm definitely at a place now where I'm going, I no longer feel confident in any of those sureties that I was so smugly certain of for so many years. I've never believed that we have souls, never believed that, I believe that when the brain shuts down, that's it, end of story. And now the mounting evidence is that I'm, almost pun, I was going to say dead wrong about it all. So I succumbed. I even succumbed to a pun, and I hate puns. So nothing is
changing. Yeah, a lot's changing before our eyes with you.
There is no solid ground.
Nothing is sacred anymore.
It's how it happens. Your paradigm shifts. You start accepting maybe there's something more. You start using puns. Next, who knows, you could become a prop comic. I don't know what the next stage.
Oh. You know what? You're right. I need to walk away from the whole thing. Yeah. I got to walk away from the whole issue.
But I
Gallagher out.
I don't, and I don't know what's going on. And I wouldn't say that I'm a religious person. I think there's more. And I've just kind of accepted or embraced the weirdness and embraced like sort of this notion of more. And yet I still also get quite annoyed with people that try to sell the rule book or try to sell the certainty, because out of that, you get people that are, so paranormal investigation, it's not a science. It's barely a pseudoscience, but it's not a science. And so when people say they're using the scientific method on a paranormal investigation, it annoys the crap out of me, because it's not a controlled environment. You're not able to recreate this over and over again. And even the use of theories is strained. That's, I use the word theories, but it's really ideas, it's notions, It bugs the hell out of me, because I think when people start throwing around ideas of like scientific method as they're applying it to paranormal investigation, maybe one day it will. Maybe one day we will be able to, talk to a ghost and recreate that experience in a lab or whatever. And then we're like, well, that's not a ghost anymore. That's another thing. It's from another dimension, whatever. But it's not right now. So when people kind of sell that certainty, it does everyone a disservice, but it also starts feeling kind of snake oily salesman kind of vibe. So I'm just like, I like doing this stuff, and I even like some of the equipment, but I'm not using this as like I have a ghost detector and this tells me that there's a ghost in the room. It's like, well, no, it's maybe measuring environmental situations. And that's kind of odd, because that doesn't match with other tools in the area like that. So you can kind of use it as a interesting guide, but it's not like some sort of ghost detector. So even matter, people love
my dreams right now, Aaron. Like my dreams are being crushed under your your feet right now. Finish what you're saying, because I
have even just the Dave said matter, like, matter can neither be created nor destroyed. Okay, yeah, that's true. So when people are like, well, when we die, what happens to us, or where does it go? Do we just, I'm like, well, no, we actually break down, we become part of the soil of the earth. And that's what's happening to our matter. It's getting recycled in a very explainable way. But you could still believe, still appreciate and embrace science while also embracing the curiosity of science and asking questions and hopefully getting to a point where we could posit true theories and experiment in a scientific way. But that said, we're not there yet, but I've certainly experienced and seen a lot of crazy shit that I cannot explain that should not have happened.
I would say scientific method has been incredibly useful and has changed the world and has certainly changed civilizations and changed the way we all live. So it's a very useful thing, but people also forget it's almost a brand new thing. It's in human history. It's very, very new, the scientific method, and it's very good at doing some things. And even within its own realm, it has some pretty glaring failures. Quantum mechanics, doesn't make any sense. not just to people like me who don't understand it, but to the people that do understand it, it doesn't make any sense, you know? And it is unreconcilable with astrophysics, you know, the large scale, you know, the black holes don't make sense. The Big Bang doesn't make sense. You know, you know, we're at a point where just like 15, 20 years ago, science had to admit that 95% of the universe was missing. And the response to that wasn't to just throw, you know, go, well, let's just throw out all science. You know, their response to that was just, well, we'll just make something up and we'll make up dark matter and dark energy. And to this day, it's still just something they made up. They have no evidence for any of it. So science has limitations. So I'm at that point where I go, well, you know, if we can acknowledge that science does some great stuff, but it doesn't do everything, and that some things may inherently not be repeatable, may not be amenable to the scientific method, but they still happen and they still exist. So what do we do with that? You know,
yeah.
You know, what do you do if, you know, if we're talking about non-human intelligence, if what do you do if the thing you're trying to subject to the scientific method is smarter than you and is in control of all the parameters that you're trying to set up? You know, it's like if, you know, it's like if the mice in a lab tried to run experiments on the scientists in the room, they would, you know, they've got no control over those parameters, and it's, you know, it's just not going to work out for them. And we might be in the same situation with, in terms of, you know, post-death ghosts, UFOs, all of these weird phenomena. They might just be things that aren't, they aren't repeating because they know we're trying to get them to.
And yeah, like I said earlier, this notion of, if there's a spectrum of belief and on one end is dogmatic, unquestioning belief, and on the other end is closed-minded cynicism, and in the middle, the sliding scale is asking questions, being skeptical, explaining what you can through theories and whatnot. I mean, this science as well. If you're so locked into one thing that you no longer ask questions and no longer allow for the possibility of more, or something that you have not been able to explain, then it's a failing of the way you approach science, you know? So science is about asking questions and being curious and trying shit out and seeing what happens.
Yes. And even if 95% of, like 95% of UFOs and 95% of ghosts can all be explained as something mundane, that in no way changes how important that 5% are.
That's a big effing 5%. Like,
yeah. It's all we know about the universe is 5%. We can only come up with 5% of the matter in the universe.
Yeah. But we're
pretty proud of that.
How did I crush your hopes and dreams there, Tom?
No, listen. We gotta get down into the boots on the ground here of how paranormal shows are made. Now, you had talked about, you caught on tape, you thought, well, you're not saying you caught on tape. You're saying as a reporter, you heard on your radio this something that was, guys, spam is calling me, so I need to pick this up. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. And you talked about the equipment, you've talked about your friend, the scientist, who was sort of making something. He's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm picking up. Could be us, could be something else. And people might take that as, you have been sort of behind the scenes of some of these paranormal shows. I have watched them religiously, loyally. I have watched many, many long hours of people not finding much in the dark, which is to me like, great. Okay. That's kind of, I don't expect, if you're throwing a bunch of shit at me, I'm going to be skeptical. But if I'm going to make a paranormal show, Aaron, how are you going to help me do it? How is it done? What are we getting, in your opinion? How much of this is not, you know, how much of this is bullshit? How much of this feels like it's authentic? Give me a sort of, you know, you're an insider in some of this stuff, and I'm curious of what are we seeing?
All right. So I would say, for the most part, so I've been fortunate with the shows that I've done that I have never been witness or privy to fakery. I do know that it is done in some places, some shows, typically, and it's not always like this willful intent to deceive. A lot can happen in editing, right? You guys know that. And so it might be, maybe there's a loud crash, you know, in the next room, and paranormal investigator guy is like, holy shit, what was that? Maybe what happens right after that is the PA or sound guy is like, oh, sorry, I just stumbled in the dark, like whatever. Like, but they cut that part out because it's like the holy shit, what was that is great TV, right? So there's that kind of thing. There are some setups, active setups that take place. I have not been party to that, but I do know that it takes place. I think honestly, for me, what I would be doing right now, and the things I am trying to do, trying to pitch, is there just needs to be more of a spectrum of people out there and stories represented. A lot of it, it's a funny thing because on one hand, you know, the distracted boyfriend meme, on one hand, we've got the girlfriend.
He's looking back.
Yeah. So on one hand, let's call the girlfriend like sort of ghosts. And then the hot new thing is demons. And the guy in the middle is a ghost show or a paranormal investigator. They love the demons. And they sometimes almost think like the ghosts are not sexy enough. So they get distracted by the demons. So they love talking about demons on a lot of these shows. And networks seem to love it as well. But it's in a weird way, like they'll talk about demons, but they don't want to really talk about religion. However, the core of a lot of these shows is still very like Judeo-Christian focused. It's still rooted in this notion of religion. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but it's a big world out there and a lot of spiritual beliefs and a lot of ghost stories that are not connected to religion. And I would love to explore more of those things. I'd like to just expand the spectrum here of what the stories we want to tell, and also the types of people. I mean, there's so many different cultures, so many different people. And look, I am a white bearded dude. I would like to continue working. However, there's a lot of other characters and representation that should be seen on these shows. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing that a lot through things like TikTok and YouTube shows and whatnot, thankfully. But
an even whiter bearded dude?
Even whiter bearded dude. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen that greenlit yet. Yeah. So I think we could get this through, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, I just want more. I just want people to explore more of this. And there seems to be, we were talking about sort of the different camps, you know, UFO guys over here, Bigfoot guys over here, and then the ghosty guys. Well, we know by the people we talk to that it seems like this anomalous activity overlaps so much in these locations and the stories and whatnot. Throwing it all together would be interesting, but networks tend to be very strict in the way they approach it, based on a hunch. It's not always based on data or, you know, actual demographic information. It's just like, well, I got a hunch that we just don't like the you know, the aliens don't do well with this. We just want ghosty stuff here, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, well, let's put it together, and that could yield more fascinating results, in my opinion. So that's the kind of stuff I personally want to do, and just elicit more stories from people. That's why I started doing the podcast, is that, you know, I'm not doing as much journalistic writing as I once was, but doing podcasts, and I think you guys probably feel this way as well, like by talking to people and getting their take on things, you're learning, but you're also exposing their viewpoints to your audiences. And that is, I think, very worthwhile.
Is that what Talking Strange will be focused on? Are you going to be reaching out, just sort of finding the ghost stories that aren't being told? Is it also going to cover you? What is the umbrella of Talking Strange?
It's we've been going for I think 2 years on this show. I've done some other podcasts in the past, but 2 years on this show, and it's kind of whatever I want to do. Honestly, I kind of just follow whatever my interests are. So, you know, I've had actors on there, you know, and it's interesting because guys like Rainn Wilson or Rhys Darby, who are known for the comedic work but are also super interested in this stuff, have been on there. The actor David Dasmalchian, who is an Oppenheimer and like is super into this stuff. So I'll talk to, you know, the folks that are out there creating the material, but also researchers. I had Avi Loeb on there. As I said, I had Paul Hynek on there. And I do reach out to people of different communities as well. Like I just interviewed a bunch of people that were Black horror writers or talking about the notion of queer hauntings, or, you know, it's just like, tell me your thing. Tell me your weirdness. You know, it doesn't always have to be a direct line. It can, because we'll get there. Like I said, you kind of hang out with someone long enough and we're going to get to the weirdness. Just kind of having a chat and being open to it. So, but yeah, it's basically whatever I want to do. I'm spoiled in that way that, you know, I get sponsorship to kind of follow whatever weird pursuits I have.
No, I would say we are just discovering that. I mean, just the thrill of every week, your mind getting opened a little bit more, or different, you know, kind of avenue of intrigue that I certainly didn't know. I mean, it's an incredible, just to have conversations every week with interesting folks has also, you know, been just an amazing gift.
And you talk to people like, I can't tell specifically, I don't know if those are Hellboy comics in the background.
There's a little of everything. You're a fan of Hellboy?
So like I love Hellboy. But you talk to guys like Mike Mignola or Neil Gaiman, creators who aren't necessarily specifically trying to talk about theories, but through their fiction, through their creative work, kind of tap into stuff that you're like, I think that might resonate in a higher consciousness kind of way. And I love that kind of thing because I'm like, I can now apply that over here, or at least, you know, kind of keep that in the back of my skull.
There's a bust of Lovecraft up here, a candle of H.P. Lovecraft's head, just because I just think the Cthulhu mythos, one of its enduring aspects is this incredible sort of the way he articulates this unnameable something out there that just really taps. To me, it just feels like the more we talk about whether it's DMT or these experiences or certain shadow form, like it feels like he at a very early stage was articulating something very primal. Scary as hell, and a great, just a great horror author. But also to your point, and like the Mike Mignola fashion, he was tapping into something that clearly resonates because, and I, you know, in the dark days of talking about this topic, I'm like, this is fucking Cthulhu shit we're dealing with at this point, you know? It's true. And I think those sort of cultural kind of crossover points, you know, people have been writing about it. The one thing you and Dave were both talking about, which is just the way that whether it's, you know, science or sort of official researchers of this subject matter, it just seems to be just turning us back toward mythology anyway. You know, it just seems to be like we're pivoting back to kind of original stories and even like the Welsh fairies. I just remember there was something in that documentary recently. I don't know if it was on Netflix or I don't know if the one, but there was a sighting in Wales, I think. And there was just a lot of discussion of how certain abductions and experiences
was that part
back
of
to the fairies, to the fairies.
Part of
yeah.
Encounters, you know. Right. The Amblin series. Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to study those, Aaron, in your travels? I mean,
Again, it's like one of those situations, you know, I lived a bit of time in Scotland and I still go back there quite a bit. And I've been fortunate to travel all over. And
I'm very jealous of you.
And it's been, again,
and you're
a
knight of Dracula, which not everybody can say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was. So I'm actually going back to Romania, Transylvania, and Halloween as part of a tour this next year. And going to be bringing a bunch of people with me and kind of leading them around. Cause I have spent a lot of time in Transylvania and through just weird journeys, the Transylvanian Society of Dracula, it's a cultural and heritage organization named myself, and then Dacre Stoker, who is the descendant of Bram Stoker. We are, I think, two of only three Knights of Dracula worldwide. It was a bizarro experience. But wow. But yeah, I mean, like, fairy folk, you know, weird,
which,
like,
which Doyle and Houdini were also interested in.
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's, you can easily point to the Cottingley fairies and say, well, man, Houdini or Doyle was just so easily conned by those little girls. Except I think one of those photos, I still like, and nobody ever quite explained that one. They even said, like, okay, we faked a couple of these, but that one, that's actually legit. But then there's people that continue to say that they experience this kind of thing. Again, you just kind of have to give people a chance to talk about it, and they'll eventually get there. And that's the other kind of thing I'm excited about, sort of this postmodern spiritualism, whatever you want to call it, this paradigm shift where we're breaking down the gates or the gatekeepers of the traditional formal religions, organized religions, no longer get to tell us what exists, what doesn't exist. And we can instead blow it wide open and go back to those older tales, go back to the ancient tales and mythology and say, well, okay, maybe those guys pre, you know, Christianity were onto something. Yeah. That's kind of a cool notion.
They're just trying to describe it. They just had different contexts for describing it, you know, and then different.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, as a grizzled old atheist, it's hard for me to come around to going, oh, well, all right. So maybe some of the Bible stuff happened. Maybe that was just, these were weird, you know, paranormal occurrences that, and their interpretation of it was, you know, took the form of a new religion, you know? And I mean, obviously there's people in the UFO community that believe there's a chance that all of our religions were deliberately started by non-humans. And then again, there's also this, I was thinking, Gary Nolan may have stumbled onto, or not stumbled on, sought it out and found it, a biological sort of like what we call a through line, which is the caudate putamen in the brain, that he's found that people with a more developed or more densely packed caudate putamen in the brain are more likely to have strong intuition, more likely to have psychic experiences, more likely to experience hauntings or UFO sightings. So he may have actually found, a physical manifestation in the brain of why some people seem to have more of these experiences than other people.
And with that, you know, you can even, there's a dotted line connection to this idea of whether you want to say tulpas, thought form, egregores, this notion of like, well, we are the source of creating the phenomena. There was, I forget when, I think in the 1970s, it was called the Philip Experiment. It was in Canada, and it was a group of academics that essentially sought to create a ghost. They gathered together and were essentially hold seances, but came up with this character, gave him a backstory. He did not exist. They, you know, I think they had a drawing of him, explained his family and everything. And then they started reporting happenings in these seance sessions of a, what they believed was a paranormal nature. So in a way that their kind of take on it is that they manifested this ghost. And, you know, that's a wild idea right mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, I remember years ago there's a CBC show called Ideas, and years ago they did a two-parter on ghosts, and they went through a lot of possible explanations. They looked at things like standing waves, and that standing waves, when they're at a certain frequency, resonate with the eye and cause visual hallucinations. And this is, you know, so they said that could be one explanation for ghosts. But then, and they went through a number of these, you know, sort of scientific possible explanations for what triggers ghost experiences. But then in the end, they came up to the conclusion quite sensibly that just because you can create a similar experience by these means doesn't mean that is what caused the experiences that people have had. you know, you can create something similar to a ghost experience through a standing wave. But that doesn't mean people who have seen ghosts were subject to a standing wave. They may have seen a ghost.
Yeah. I mean, you can create a haunting sensation by the use of infrasound, which was also used in movie theaters to, you know, give people the creeps, or yeah, maybe people actually experienced some sort of creepiness that was not due to some sort of infrasound or high levels of electromagnetic fields in the area. And there's a sociologist, I forget the sociologist's name or psychologist's name, but they coined this phrase of haunted people syndrome. And their approach was, again, you don't necessarily have to believe in the ghost, but we should be taking these people's experiences seriously. And in that, in their kind of study, their paper that they had published, it was breaking down what this haunted people syndrome was, what it is, how it looks. And it's not just some sort of neuroses or psychoses, or it's not just a delusion. It is a thing that these people are actually experiencing.
No, and there's clearly, I mean, I agree. There's sensitive. I mean, it's strange. I can be both skeptical of psychic abilities and then have met people where I'm like, oh yeah, they're totally psychic. You know, it's like, there's just like my own, you know, where I'm like, I cannot deny that I have met and had friends in my life who felt like they just picked things out of my brain that shouldn't have been, you know, like possible, or that they were able to kind of, sort of feel these, you know, feel out these things. It's fascinating. What are you up to now, Aaron? Like, what's next for you? Is it 20 now? So 28 Days Haunted is on Netflix.
Yep.
Do you know that
the first season?
Look, I got a little thumbs up show up on my thing. Will that be continuing? Do we know yet? What's next for you?
So I was very excited. 28 Days Haunted. Yeah, we have the first season out on Netflix. It did really well.
Explain what the 28 Days phenomena is.
Yeah. So the notion behind it, the kind of the show construction, is that Ed and Lorraine Warren, famous paranormal investigators, felt that at 28 days in a location, you could pierce the veil of hauntings, and that you would essentially be able to experience, I guess, more of a porous interaction with a ghost. That said, the idea of staying in a location as long as you can, that's been something that's been around for a long time. I mean, you look at guys like Harry Price, he was trying to stay in the Bordley Rectory for months at a time. So it is unique in this way from a TV perspective of staying in a location for 28 days. What also kind of gives it a unique spin is that we have three different investigative teams embedded in three separate locations for that 28 days. And I've got the God's eye view as the host and the guy in the control room, the guy in the chair that is watching all of the unfiltered feeds and everything and seeing as this activity is happening or potentially ramping up, that sort of thing. So yeah, the longer you stay in a place, the more the place gets used to you, the more you get used to the place, and the more potential you have for possible paranormal activity. So that charted top 10 on Netflix for a couple weeks globally, which was insane. We were like getting something like 70 million hours streamed like right off the bat. It was pretty crazy. So we're waiting on another to find out if we're getting another season on that. Like everything, entertainment industry has just been a weird time with both mergers and budgets being slashed and everything. It's just weird. You guys understand that. So waiting on that one. Meanwhile, Paranormal Caught on Camera is coming back for a seventh season. Excited about that. The Talking Strange podcast and live YouTube show continues, and we're always looking for guests on that one. So hit me up, and would love to have you guys on it as well.
Yeah.
And aside from that, you know, I travel all around looking and exploring this stuff and having a great time doing it, but I'm also I'm trying to get some other projects off the ground where I can expand our exploration. So it doesn't have to be just UAP here, Bigfoot here, and then ghosts over here, where we combine it and we also, you know, bring more seats to the table of different types of people with different types of backgrounds and cultural, input. So that's something I'm really just focused on. And then aside from that, I'm just a big freaking nerd. So I do a lot of Comic Cons as well. And just love, you know, nerding out, hanging out with people.
Man. And we need to talk like comics and, you know, toys and all that at some point. Cause I'm sure that is a zone we share.
Yeah, but maybe for if you do a Patreon spinoff episode, we'll talk comic stuff. Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
All right. Well, I just want to pitch. I think Comedians in Haunted Houses is a good series.
I love that idea because ghosts can be funny. Like people that show up in a haunted location and they open with, "How did you die?" You know, like it's like, well, you know, why don't you go into a place and be like, "Yo, you know, how's the food here? What's the, you know, there's like a ton of like places in the Catskills, like old comedy spots that are said to be haunted. A lot of them have been torn down, unfortunately, but there's still some. I'm like, the best way, I think, to invite someone in, not even a ghost, just like at a party, is be funny, be likable, be affable. Yeah. So, you know, welcome in the activity by having a laugh. So I am not totally the
why did you kill
that.
Your whole family question? Not first thing out of the game.
Okay. Yeah. Coming in hot, right?
And good comedians get funnier when they're frightened. I know.
I love that. We'll get this greenlit.
That sounds good to me. Hey, Aaron, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for taking the time. This was a fun chat. Let's do it. Let's do it again. Let's keep the conversation going.
I love it. It was a blast talking to you guys. And hit me up on social and everything. And let's stay connected.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.